press play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the Midside, where I have no idea what's going on right now because we're on YouTube, Instagram, probably some other platform. Alexa is probably capturing us right now because it's a government tap wire.
Sure.
Yeah, see?
See? 100%, right? Yeah, everyone heard that? RIP Bart Starr, go Patriots. I'm your host, Justin M. Lesneski. And if you are still with us after that ridiculous opening, then you are a true Midsider. And you are in for a treat today, because not only am I reviewing the new live-action Aladdin, but Daniel has an exclusive review of Disneyland's Star Wars Galaxy Edge. You can only hear here on the Midside. Take that Star Wars girl. Joining me this trip, as you can already see, originally from our nation's capital, but currently in Midside headquarters, Daniel T. Richards.
And boy, is it good to be out of the swamp and into whatever the hell this is.
We need a nickname for Los Angeles, for Southern California, like the swamp.
The dump.
The dump, there we go. So he's out of the swamp and he's into the dump.
That's right.
I'm for it. Also joining us, who lives in the dump, just a different area of the dump, Dale's Lawn. And he always forgoes his gay white male privilege by identifying as a woman. Probably should have wore a wig for the live stream, but...
That's true.
William Green.
Hello, hello. Good to make the trek and the adventure that is parking here in Justin's complex. I never know if my car is going to be there when I come back to it. But I'm here, and I'm wondering where your lightsaber is. Because you're supposed to make your custom lightsaber.
I where is it? My custom lightsaber.
Are you keeping it in your pants?
Save for the fact that I will not... pay the Walt Disney Corporation $200 to do so.
Just to get in the room, right?
Just to get in the room.
How many Harry Potter wands is that at Universal?
we'll talk about that and more in terms of the experience, but I was a little shocked with that. But they understand that they can just pick up Star Wars fans and just ring them, and just money will just fall out of them.
After we are at the 1 year anniversary of the disaster that was the Han Solo movie, so they should probably ring it while they can, because it's all downhill from here.
By the way, did you see that there was a Twitter campaign for Make Solo 2 Happen?
Ugh.
To celebrate the 1 year anniversary?
Nice.
With the only signature, Alden Ehrenreich?
There were a lot of people. I don't understand.
Which internet rule is it that you know, there's all the crazy internet rules? There's one that's like, there's a fandom for everything. Yeah. You know, we all knew Rule 34 is like, you know, there's
porn
a fetish for everything.
Yeah,
but there is a fandom for everything. So even something shitty like the Han Solo movie, there is a fandom.
Some corollary, there is a petition to do everything at any given moment. I suspect there is a petition to not release a Solo 2 that has as many signatures.
Well,
all the same people.
And that's the thing, right? This is the backlash edition. This is part of the backlash now, is that because the internet is being used as this voice of the people to come out against things like Solo.
The Vox Populi.
The Vox Populi, yes. It's being used in that way. There are now people who want to act smarter than everyone else, so they'll do, like, Make Solo 2 Happen, because they're like, oh, I understood the movie, you didn't. I mean, we see that with The Last Jedi, right?
Yeah.
People are always saying, oh, The Last Jedi was so good because it subverted Star Wars. It subverted your expectations. To which Daniel then says...
Then it's not Star Wars.
Okay, that pretty much sums that up, and that's the perfect time to go into the news with Daniel T. Richards.
Thank you for joining us here on the Midside. And I want to send a special thank you to our Patreon subscribers. Patreon.com/TheMidside is where you can go to give us a couple bucks every time we produce a piece of content. It helps us quite a bit. Helps us keep Justin's literal lights on.
There's a few that aren't on right now, so if you could, make even a small donation.
It would help.
That's not true. That money is actually still all sitting in Patreon, because I will not take it out while I live in the dump, because I don't want to give any more tax money to the dump. Because they will probably take, like, a significant portion of that and use it to, I don't know, build more trash compactors. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, they'll probably use it to let more homeless people live on the street.
There are quite a few of those. Well, in other states that are going toward the dump, Nevada. Did you know that the Nevada Senate passed a bill this week that would give their electoral college votes to whomever wins the national popular vote, regardless of how the state votes?
I know that because I put the outline together.
I know that because my computer's talking to me. Okay. The state Senate passed the measure 12-8 on Tuesday. It goes to the governor, Steve Sisolak, who is a Democrat. And if he signs the measure into law, Nevada would become the latest state to join the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact, an agreement among a number of states to give their electoral college votes to whichever presidential candidate wins the popular vote. Why did they use the word whichever and not whomever?
In case it's a non-person? Human? Yeah.
Well, it's a state. It's not a
in
person.
In case a dog wins the president? No.
Oh.
Votes to whichever presidential candidate. It should be whomever.
Okay, I mean... Well, what's that law? Don't assume incompetence? I'm assuming incompetence.
Okay. Currently, 14 states and the District of Columbia have passed legislation to join the pact, which would only take effect if a number of states holding the majority of the Electoral College's 538 electoral votes join the agreement. The total is currently at 189, and Nevada's 6 electoral votes would boost the number to 195. Lawmakers in Maine passed a similar bill earlier this month, and it currently waits to be signed or vetoed by Maine Governor Janet Mills, also a Democrat. So, what do you think about this, Justin? If the majority of the Electoral College votes, i.e. the majority of 538, decide they want to give their votes to the national popular election winner, they will do so and essentially forego whatever their state's vote. They will give up their own say in their electoral votes and give it to New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, and Houston, and that's it. Thoughts?
I mean, is there a better example of giving up your own self-interest for the greater good?
Not in the political realm.
I mean, they're at least internally consistent with their collectivist altruist principles, right? Mm-hmm. But they're going against what this nation was founded on. Am I wrong?
Slavery? It's not slavery?
No. Oh, okay. Not slavery. Slavery was not the answer to that one. Sorry.
Okay, sorry.
Sorry.
Usually the answer to every question about the founders is slavery.
Yeah.
So I thought, slip it in there.
No. Is that how they got him? Slavery? By slipping
it
in
there? Oh, my God. Okay. Thanks. It's been great.
We already got our first news.
It's really interesting to me. And I'm not a legal expert. And what? Maybe one of you can teach me about this. But... the idea that someone can just vote against the basic system that was set up in this country and just destroy it seems weird to me. Because the whole article even reads like they're holding the election before the election, where they're like, oh, this many electoral votes. And that's what you do on an election night. You sit there and you count the electoral votes. Now we're already counting the electoral votes. It's very strange to me.
William, one thing I'll note, and you can respond to and then say whatever you want, because I have no idea what you're thinking, is that the country has already quasi-subverted the Electoral College in the sense that most state legislatures require the popular vote of that state. Require the electors to vote for the candidate of the popular vote of that state. That is actually not how the system is set up at the founding. At the founding, the Electoral College would take the popular vote of that state into consideration, but may choose to vote against the popular vote of that state, which was supposed to be the sort of last vanguard against dictatorship, where you have a popular vote of a state saying, I want crazy dictator guy, and these supposedly more educated, sophisticated electoral college voters going, oh, no, you're too stupid. We're not going to let that happen. So this just seems to be a continuation of the bastardization of the process anyway.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because who would prosecute someone for... what state would prosecute its electors for going to D.C. and voting other than what the law in their state requires? I mean, would that be that's an interesting separation of powers question. But I have another question. What happens in that same scenario? What happens when the next, Margaret Thatcher, Reagan type is elected? Or, heaven forbid, what if Trump gets the popular vote in the next election cycle?
Impossible!
What will they do? What will they do? They'll be bound by law to vote for Trump. And, this, their heads will have to explode. And that's the thing about these sort of overreactions is that they end up giving so much, they end up taking away power from actual people in their state, and it's going to, they see it in the very short term, well, that'll help us, you know, next time when Hillary Clinton runs again this election cycle and wins the popular vote. But it's actually not, right? And besides that, what does even the popular vote mean when you're talking about the presidential election where we have the Electoral College, right? Like, the popular vote, that because of the way we roll out results,
that's right.
Like, you know, you could end up, if a Republican is winning, let's say, all the key states, like at the beginning of, before the, let's say, central time zone, all right, when the central time zone stuff closes, who in California is going to bother to go vote, right? Like, that's...
And it's the entire purpose. It's the entire idea of, yes, you have to appeal to the large populace, but you also have to appeal regionally. So you can't just promise the people in the large cities, I'm going to redistribute, say, all the wealth from the rural counties to you, Los Angeles, New York, and Chicago. And so I don't need the rest of these people if it's just a massive popular vote contest. So, yeah, it's the equivalent of someone pointed out that, like, in the World Series, you know, it's like, oh, they won four of the seven games, but the other team scored more runs, so they should have won. It's like, well, this is the system we have. Stop complaining about, I mean, if you don't win the popular vote, who cares? Because you went for the way we win the game, right?
Yeah.
It's not like we sprung this on Hillary Clinton on election night. It's like, oh, by the way, the popular vote doesn't matter. Oh, sorry. We forgot to tell you. No, it's the way the system's set up. You did a horrible strategy and you lost because you were a horrible candidate.
It's funny that you say that because when people start out playing League of Legends, they try to focus on kills, which does give you gold, but like, you win the game via objectives.
That's right.
So like, you'll end up losing the game and you're like, but we got like twice as many kills as the other two. It's like,
that's right.
That doesn't matter. Like, they got to the base first.
The Eagles had more points, but Tom Brady threw for more yards. So the Patriots should have won that Super Bowl.
Yeah, because he had more yards and more touchdown passes, right? Than Nick Foles, yeah.
So he should have won. They should have won the Super Bowl.
I'm okay with it in that case. No, I mean, look, everything you guys are saying is making me think of two things, right? So I already mentioned how this is a perfect example of altruism and collectivism, right? But it's also a perfect example of pragmatism and emotionalism.
It's got something for everyone.
I mean, it's like,
it also makes Julianne fries.
A great reference. Great appropriate reference. But no, William, when you're talking and you're sitting there and you're talking about how, oh, we're going to change the entire system because we didn't get the result we wanted in the last election. Is there a better example of infantile emotionalism than that? Oh, we're so mad Hillary didn't get elected, so we're just going to change the way our entire voting system works.
That's right. Throw out the baby with the bathwater.
It's insane. It is insane. Here's a final question on this,
okay,
for you guys. Is this actually going to happen? Are they going to get enough states to vote for this?
Seems unlikely. But I mean, maybe. Some of the bigger Electoral College number states are left-leaning.
Right.
So potentially, I'd have to look at the list of who's already passed it. So if like California, Illinois, New York have already passed it and they haven't gotten their number, then...
I mean, if California hasn't, they will. I mean, come on.
Well, yeah. And I think the whole point here is that this is left up to the states to decide. So mm-hmm. Let them try and see how they like it. You know,
well, it'll be fun.
It'll be fun. Yeah, exactly. It'll be fun when they have to vote for the next Trump or Reagan or something like that. It's going to be really fun to see them have to do that.
One other historical side.
Imagine the landslide victory if, like, some Republican just manages to eke out 51% and California passes this and all those electors
and
go.
California has to go to Trump.
Yeah. it's going to be amazing, right?
Trump is the next Reagan,
yeah.
Wins 49 states.
So
you just made me smile
should...
at Trump getting elected by a landslide, and I hate you for it.
Dana, I'm interested in this. What should it be? Should it be proportional? Like, should California look at its popular vote and proportionally allocate? Should it just all go to the one, like, based on the popular...
No. Less democracy. Less direct democracy. Go back to the system that was set up. Let the Electoral College be the Electoral College, and let them vote for the candidate they believe to be the best candidate, and then the state elects the electors. So it's a sort of Republican system in the same way that we have electors that go to Congress for the House of Representatives and the Senate. It's the same kind of thing. The state elects the electors, and the electors get to pick. And yes, popular vote is something in consideration, but they also need to look at the quality of the candidate. and decide that candidate is not going to support the Constitution, they're not going to support individual rights, and we're not going to pick that person even if people want them. Because that's not what we are. We are not a democracy. We are a federal constitutional republic.
Fascist.
Yes, I know. One last note, historical note on... bless you. One last historical note on... that's your girlfriend, right?
Not or the cat.
The cat sneezed that loud? That was an Asian sneeze, you could tell. Last note about historical subversion.
Because after she sneezed, she like went across three lanes of traffic and crashed.
That's right. The one bit of historical subversion that I think people don't understand the impact of it, which this could be similar, is the direct election of senators. So we did not always directly elect senators in this country. Senators were appointed by the state legislatures. And the reason was the senators were supposed to be more tied to the state and the interests of the state and not the interests of the popular vote. So imagine today... if senators were appointed by the state legislatures and not...
How many lobbyists would be out of business?
All of them, basically. I mean, there's so much subversion of the Republican system that we have by moving in the Democrat direction. And I don't mean even Democratic Party. I just mean democracy. It's hard to believe.
And we're going to attract a ton of alt-right listeners now. That's because it's sad, you know...
Actually, we're probably going to get kicked off YouTube because of everything you just
Bye.
Said.
Bye. Bye, YouTube.
No, and in that same vein, my favorite sort of cause, my favorite sort of issue in relation to this, which is a little more simplistic, but I think it's equally as harmful. None of these people were fucking full-time people. It wasn't a full-time job being a national federal government official until the 1970s.
Yeah.
You had to go to fucking work and support yourself.
Yeah.
So, of course, when you make this a full-time job, all this shit happens.
It's true. Make Congress poor again.
Make Congress poor again.
That's right.
Build that wall. Don't build the wall.
Just build a wall around Congress.
Yeah.
Compromise.
Yeah, a little compromise.
I love this compromise. So... in a bit of uncompromise, which I like, actually, the company CrossFit...
Wait, CrossFit not compromising? I'm shocked.
Uncompromising CrossFit. CrossFit, which is a, I guess it's a technically like an exercise and nutrition company. I don't know how exactly to describe it. It's a...
Nutrition exercise cult.
Cult, okay. CrossFit has decided to suspend their use of Facebook and other associated properties.
They would not be on Instagram Live right now like we are.
That's right. So recently, this is from the CrossFit, what is it called, press release about this. So they talk about who they are. They're a voluntary community of 15,000 affiliates and millions of individuals who stand against, this is my favorite part, an unholy alliance of academia, government, and multinational food, beverage, and pharmaceutical companies. That's how they defend themselves.
That's how they define themselves.
Yes. CrossFit defends relentlessly the right of its affiliates, trainers, and athletes to practice CrossFit, build voluntary CrossFit associations and businesses, and speak openly and freely about the ideas and principles that animate our views of exercise, nutrition, and health. This website, and until recently CrossFit's Facebook page and Instagram accounts, has long cataloged CrossFit's tireless defense of its community against overreaching governments, malicious corporations, and corrupt academic organizations. And this is where it gets juicy. Recently, Facebook deleted, without warning or explanation, the Banting 7-Day Meal Plan user group. This group has 1.65 million users who post testimonials and other information regarding the efficacy of low-carbohydrate, high-fat diet. While the site has subsequently been reinstated, also without warning or explanation, Facebook's action should give any serious person reason to pause, especially those of us engaged in activities contrary to prevailing opinion. So CrossFit then essentially says, we're out. We're not going to use this stuff anymore because there's no consistency, there's no explanation, there's no reason given for these things. So how can we accurately plan how to use them? If we're going to basically use the platforms and then just... they can Thanos us away at any given moment. What is the point of using them? They also list a list of grievances that is Declaration of Independence-esque, if I may say so. So that they go on and say these publicly sourced complaints about Facebook include but are not limited to the following. I won't read all of them. I'll just read a couple. Facebook collaborates with government security agencies on massive citizen surveillance programs such as PRISM. Whoa there. Facebook censors and removes user accounts based on unknown criteria and at the request of third parties, including government and foreign government agencies. Facebook has poor security protocols and has been subject to the largest security breaches of user data in history. And then finally, and then we'll get to you since it's your show. Facebook is acting in the service of food and beverage industry interests by deleting the accounts of communities that have identified the corrupted nutritional science responsible for unchecked global chronic disease. For these reasons, CrossFit has placed Facebook and its associated properties under review and will no longer support or use Facebook services until further notice. Justin, might I say that CrossFit has gone social media galt?
This is, like, the most CrossFit story I've ever heard in my entire life, and it is also incredibly appropriate for this day and age. CrossFit, the idea that they would make a show of what they're doing to make themselves and their lives better, mm-hmm. that's CrossFit in a nutshell. But also, in our virtue signaling age, isn't it appropriate that CrossFit is the company that will lead us out of the darkness and into the light? I mean, look, I'm mocking the shit out of CrossFit because CrossFit and CrossFit people are annoying as fuck, but you're reading that shit and I'm like, yeah, yeah, sign me up. I'm going to CrossFit. Yeah, I love these guys. I mean, the whole, like, we're going to expose the way these things are used to promote these industries.
The unholy alliance of academia, government, and multinutritional fast food and beverage and pharmaceutical corporations.
Well, I love academia, government, fast food. Because that is the fast food industrial complex you need to watch out for, ladies and gentlemen.
Right. Big burger.
Big burger. So, like, I really like part of this, but then the other part I don't like is sort of like, it's just grandstanding. All they're trying to do is use their power. They're trying to leverage their power to get Facebook to do what they want. And it's just sort of like, but they're missing the points.
In this instance, William, isn't getting Facebook to do what they want a generally a good thing? They're using their market power here and saying,
yeah,
taking our properties.
Are they asking Facebook to take any action?
Not directly,
no.
But
well,
come on.
And aren't there other groups that have also started, like, following this lead and
sure.
getting off of, I think it was in a different version of the story that we were looking at, but just to give people the context on, like, the number of people, like the number of followers they had. So the CrossFit group on Facebook, 3.1 million. The CrossFit games on Facebook, 2.3 million. Obviously, probably some overlap, but still a lot. CrossFit Instagram, 2.8 million. CrossFit games Instagram, 2.4 million. So they just Thanos snapped about 3 million at least, right? You'd say probably at least 3 million uniques.
Those numbers are interesting to me. Because it shows just how good at being vocal and how good at good at marketing CrossFit is.
Mm-hmm.
You would have thought in a country of 300 million, there'd be more than 3 million people on social media supporting CrossFit stuff.
It's really? I don't know. That seems like a goodly number of people for something I have no connection with. Like, I think I've seen one CrossFit gym in D.C. total. Maybe they're just hidden in the shadows. Because they feel too libertarian for the swamp. But that seems like a good number to me. I don't know. This is a case, Justin, where I think that you could put it in the bucket of virtue signaling, and I get that. But there is a fine line, or maybe it's the same line and it's just different virtues, virtue signaling and then actually calling out, you know, to use a word, evil. Calling out bad things.
Well, yeah. Well, that, I think that's an important thing to explore, right? There's a difference between virtue signaling and living on principle, right? Like that, that's the problem with virtue signaling is that you're not actually doing something.
It's,
the principle you're using is I want to look good, not I'm trying to, you know, live the virtuous life.
It's principle face.
Yeah,
I'm saying. Yeah. Virtue signaling is principle face.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great way of putting it because don't you incidentally or indirectly or accidentally virtue signal if you're living a virtuous or principle-based life?
Yeah, I mean, to use the phrase, I think, in an incorrect way.
Yeah, yeah. The virtue signal, the point of that is not to even show that I'm a virtuous person. It's that it's second-handed, right? It's saying, you all aren't as virtuous as me, right? Look at me doing this pious thing, right?
That's
this pious act.
Yeah. Is there ever a case where a virtue signal is important or good, though? I mean, what about a job interview? Don't you need to virtue signal to the people interviewing you?
But again, I think it's stretching the term beyond its objective, legitimate purpose.
Okay.
Right? Because at some point, you're just demonstrating that you have principle. Whereas in virtue signal, it's not about living that way. It's not about integrating it into your life. It's just about making other people think you think something.
So we would distinguish between virtue signaling and principle signaling, we could say.
Sure. Not sure we need the word signaling in that one. But this makes me think more highly of CrossFit.
Before,
I did think they were a little culty. But maybe they still are a little culty. And
join us next episode where Daniel signs up for a CrossFit gym.
That's don't do it.
Not gonna happen.
I always tell people I'd rather get my injuries actually snowboarding than like jumping up and down off a box. So
I mean, that's the interesting thing about CrossFit to me is everything you're saying seems to be contradictory with the idea that they've turned weightlifting into a competition. Like they compete with each other. The CrossFit games are like people competing against each other in weightlifting competition. But the person you're competing with in weightlifting is yourself.
Oh, it's so poetic. Yeah, anyway, this is not the start, but maybe one of the bigger Jenga pieces to fall from the already crumbling tower of Facebook. Certainly my employer, who I don't name on this show, while we still use Facebook.
McDonald's.
Correct.
Part of the food industrial, what was it?
The fast food industrial complex.
Thank you.
Big Burger.
Not Bob's Burgers. Big Burger, not Big Boy.
You should support Bob's Burgers because he is being crushed by the
Bob's
the
Burgers,
Big Burger.
Not Big Burgers.
Yeah, there you go.
Has suspended our advertising efforts on any social media, or sorry, any Facebook-owned platform. Because of the silencing of certain voices and because of the inefficacy of advertising and the inefficacy of organic properties now on Facebook, it's not worth it for us anymore.
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned that. So, you know, I'm looking with the stuff that I'm doing to prepare for the store opening, like I'm looking at what, like, media marketing, like I have some money that I have to spend on media marketing. It's like, wow, I get nothing. There's no value out of Facebook. Like, absolutely.
Nope. So. And people are starting to realize that and backing off on spending.
I've deleted the Facebook app from my phone, and I don't have Facebook
or Messenger, yeah.
I have Messenger because there's, I have a friend who I talk to.
Whoa. Yeah, breaking news?
Yeah, I have a friend who I talk to on there, and that's the only place I talk to him. But beyond that, I don't use Facebook at all.
Yeah, I feel bad. If someone is sending me messages on Facebook Messenger, I am sorry that I only check it like once a month when I log in to do something related to the Midside or the
store.
That
is accurate because the Game of Thrones review, the Patreon exclusive, we're recording it next week, and I went into the Patreon review team thread, and I was messaging, and we got Midsider Dan to join us, and then we kept bunting ties back and forth, and I would tag you and be like, well, it depends on what William thinks.
Oh,
and then William was never alive.
I just ghosted you.
Facebook dead.
Okay. Yeah. Well, it's interesting to think about. Yeah, for those of us who are old, well, mainly me, remember the MySpace days and when MySpace took the turn and it happened asymptotically, right? Like it was a lot of little degradations, and then all of a sudden, it just sort of like just the bottom fell out. And I think that's got to be Zuckerberg's like biggest fear is that we're getting to that part where the bottom's going to fall out. Twitter's kind of in a position like they're still trying to like they've never really made money, so they're not as far down this advertising train as Facebook is, but. It's you've got a lot of competition right now, right? Minds is out there and doing fairly well.
There's the new intellectual dark web social community that I just joined.
Well, Facebook killed itself with Instagram, didn't it?
And they swallowed Instagram?
Well, what I'm saying is everyone's on Instagram now. They're not on Facebook.
So what you're saying is Facebook is like...
The Borg?
No, from the Alien movie. Oh, what was the character name? Gets the egg implanted inside him, and then Instagram shoots out of his chest.
Oh, yeah, the face hugger, the chest rippers, yeah.
Which becomes the xenomorph.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you could say that. So this is the first part of the backlash, right? I think we're starting to see backlash against social justice in general. I mean, you mentioned Facebook, but I think we're starting to...
Were you mocking my
Facebook?
Yeah,
you're a very terrible shot.
I have a retainer now.
Your mother's on Facebook.
Yes. So, you know, the backlash against Facebook, but I think we're starting to see the backlash in general against social justice. I think social justice is on its way out. You're talking about the degradation. I think we're starting to see that with social justice, too, and I think the next story is more evidence of that.
Maybe. This next story is under, on Deadspin.com, the journalism-ism category, and that's... I've never seen a more appropriate category for something on Deadspin.com. So Laura Wagner writes this headline, ESPN president, quote, "We're going to keep the old whites happy." We're middle-aged whites, so he's not referring to us. ESPN president...
Are we middle-aged?
Yes. Are we not middle-aged? I think we're middle-aged, right?
Justin's middle-aged.
I want to die.
Okay. ESPN president Jimmy Pitaro, whose biggest accomplishment since taking over the network more than a year ago has been tenderly kissing the NFL's ass, is once again harping on the importance of sticking to sports. This time, however, he's not just saying the network shouldn't cover, quote, pure politics. He's saying that fans, or at least a certain type of fan, doesn't want ESPN to cover politics at all, blaming the network's previous supposed failures at sticking to sports on, quote, confused employees. Yesterday, the Los Angeles Times published a fawning profile of Pitaro and his influence at ESPN, written by Stephen Battaglio. The report was all too happy to let Pitaro speak in vague terms about politics without pressing him even slightly on the specifics. So this is a quote from the article. Pitaro has also satisfied ESPN's more traditional fans by steering commentators away from political discussions on air and on social media, which heightened during President Trump's criticism of NFL player protests against social injustice during the national anthem. Quote, "Without question, our data tells us our fans do not want us to cover politics," Pitaro said. "My job is to provide clarity. I really believe that some of our talent was confused on what we expected of them." Confused meaning, I think in my mind, told otherwise by previous president.
Well, you can be like they. It's like Jafar with his serpent staff, right? I mean, he confused the Sultan. Mm-hmm.
That's right. If you fast forward for today, I don't believe they are confused. So this is what Laura has to say about this in the journalism-ism category of Deadspin.com. "Without the benefit of basic questioning, the traditional fans, as Battaglio calls them, that Pitaro is so concerned with pleasing can be understood to be the older, whiter segments of ESPN's audience, and politics is nothing more than a euphemism for any topic of conversation that those older, whiter consumers might find upsetting." Neither Pitaro nor Battaglio, who was no doubt thrilled to get an exclusive with ESPN's president, make it explicit, but their meaning is clear, given ESPN's history of being hounded by mostly white, right-wing dopes who didn't like ESPN discussing NFL players kneeling to protest police brutality. As one current ESPN talent who spoke to Deadspin on the condition of anonymity put it, quote, "This is what it sounds like when a scared network takes the people of color in its audience and in its offices for granted." Justin, are you now turning back to ESPN because they're the all-white network?
I will not I will not turn back to ESPN until they apologize for Deflategate.
Well, as they say, don't hold your breath.
I mean, that's the thing that really bothers me about all of this is Jimmy Pitaro is right. Okay, I am firmly on the side of Jimmy Pitaro on here. When I read the LA Times article, or was sent to me by Midsider Abe earlier in the week, I was like, this is great. This is great. He's finally taking the politics out of it. Because correct me if I'm wrong, but growing up watching SportsCenter when it was always on for like 6 fucking hours, right? Did they ever talk about any politics?
No.
They didn't talk about right-wing politics. They didn't talk about left-wing. They didn't talk about socialism.
Maybe when the president threw a pitch or something like that. It wouldn't even be politics. Right. It would just be like, oh, look, this, you know.
Right, the president's throwing a pitch.
Yeah.
Which is fine. That's news. If the president's throwing the first pitch, the opening pitch, you know, Obama goes, he throws the opening pitch at the Chicago Cubs game. That's news. Put that on ESPN. But they never talked about politics. But what Deadspin is doing is the gaslighting that social justice in the left does. It's the idea of they say that, oh, you're only doing this because you're trying to shut us down, because you're picking a side. By doing this, you're picking a side. Because built into social justice in the left nowadays is this gaslighting. That if you're not speaking up against the oppression they see, against the systemic oppression they see, then you're for it.
They create that false dichotomy to try and guilt you and make you feel bad and make you feel like that's the problem. And that's what they're doing here.
And yeah, totally.
It's disgusting.
So, Justin, as Nostradamus, the gaming industry, of course, is several years ahead on this front from compared to sports. So there's a lot of folks that just want to play games, right? And they like the games that they like. And so the fact that for political reasons they're making Mortal Kombat characters less sexy or that they're...
I mean, how sexy were women who killed you anyway? Like, that doesn't really get me going.
Yeah, well, but... It's changing for that reason, right?
Right, no, I understand.
Pointing that out.
And with Mortal Kombat, they also did the woke ending for Jax.
Yeah.
Right, where he wins the tournament and he uses it to go back in time and end slavery in America before it started.
Oh.
Which then creates a predestination paradox, because how can he go back in time if he never lived in a world where there was slavery to create him?
Yeah. So if you want to talk about that, you're immediately alt-right and, you know, all those evil things that you just...
Well, right, and that's part of the gaslighting. I mean, it's even...
Because clearly you hate women if you want, you know, a character that has a, you know, 25-year history of looking pretty to continue to look pretty.
Right.
That's clearly...
If you say anything positive about Trump, if you say anything against social justice, you're automatically alt-right nowadays. That's how they do it. I mean, this response is one of the greatest fears I've had about our show. Well, it's very obvious, you know, we're not in favor of the wall. We don't like Trump. But if we ever say anything good about them, people are like, oh, well, you sound right wing. Excuse me?
So
we're nationalists now?
Here's our great right wing statement of the day. Trump is not evil.
All right.
That's our second community strike already. We could strike out the channel on one live stream.
So sorry, I didn't mean
yeah,
to derail.
No, that's fine. So there's a bunch of independent sort of gaming journalists got together, made a website called Exclusively Games, where they only talk and review about games. No politics. Now, it just so happens that many of these people are center or center-right politically, or have... Even if they aren't center-right, some of them tend to be more liberal-left, but they do things like, you know, call out the politics being put into games and immediately get gaslit, like you were saying. So this site is, of course, in the mainstream journalism of video gaming like Kotaku, is an alt-right website. But I challenge you all to go to Exclusively Games and just read the review. Like, it's just review. It's like what Game Informer used to be back in the day, right, where you would see... actual pictures from the game that they're reviewing.
And
talk about gameplay and not about the social justice implications of how big someone's breasts are.
And it hurts the industry as a whole to have these social justice implications, because I know Game Informer and I'm not a gamer. I am terrible at video games, but I would read sites like that and I would know more about video games and I would be more interested in them now. I am less engaged with tertiary interests now. It's really hard for me to engage with things outside of what I really know is safe for me. And what I mean is safe, where I'm not going to be preached to and tried to be gaslit the whole time. So you hurt your industry as a whole, because you're only marketing to your small segment that is super obsessed.
My God, listen to these alt-right headlines on this website. Top 10 Star Wars games. 16 May indie games worth checking out. Age of Empires 2, a retrospective. Well, that one's colonialism, clearly. Yeah, this is not... To describe this as alt-right is not only intellectually dishonest, it's ludicrous and potentially psychiatric.
But don't you think that people do that because of how far left this country has moved? That's
so how far left, if your headline is Top 10 Star Wars Games... Because it didn't go Top 10 Star Wars games that oppressed black people.
Yes.
And you're automatically
right
wing.
Yeah. Yes. That is what I am saying, yes.
So, a couple things here. First is, this gives me hope for a business model that I had.
For the news?
Yes, called Not First News.
Yeah.
And all it is just plain reporting of news, never first. And our slug line is never first, always accurate. And all it is just is a plain text presentation of news. I don't even think we would do photographs.
I think that is a brilliant idea, and I think it's ahead of the curve, because I think it's going to go back there. Because the biggest problem social media presents that has led to this and has quickened to this and made it more extreme is the false value of immediacy. And what I mean by that is it's very specious because something is right there immediately in front of you. You think it's right or correct or the best.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happens with Twitter is people go on there.
First.
I mean, right. And we even saw this with, if you remember when we were at Clemson and there was the Virginia Tech massacre.
Mm-hmm.
And the wrong Asian guy got accused.
Because
people found a Facebook profile of an Asian in the South with lots of guns. Because someone in the South has lots of guns. It must have been him who committed the crime. And they started saying...
Wouldn't it be more suspect if he didn't have a picture of himself with a lot of guns in the South?
Exactly.
That's right. What's wrong with him?
But because...
Oh, did I say what's wrong with him? I'm sorry. That was offensive. I didn't mean to do that.
But that's because...
our third community strike. Gone.
Let's just count the number of strikes this episode. But because it was first and it was there and it was immediate, everyone assumed it was correct.
That's right.
And everyone now has... It's almost like people's brains are being rewritten, especially these kids.
Not first news. No exclusives. No breaking anything. Slow, steady, paced, sourced news. And then two is just a sort of a reiteration, but maybe slightly different angle on it, which is the article has the... suppressed premise that not talking about politics is necessarily a bad thing in sports, when I would challenge that sports sort of almost definitionally is one of the categories sort of distinct from politics. Like, you do sports, you engage in sports so that you are not discussing
the politics. Same can be said for video games.
The same
and
can
that's
be said for
not,
games because
entertainment. Not, yeah, that's not how the mainstream press in video games.
I know, and I know this point has been covered. I just wanted this slightly different.
Yeah.
Yeah, not to go into an episode of Belichick Your Premises, but this is what you wanted to talk about in our season that never happened with sports being art. It's the same thing with video games. They're reality based activities.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by that is they have a set of rules, they have a set of parameters, and whoever can achieve within those parameters best wins.
Yes.
The problem is, and this is why they're going after games and why sports is their last, this is the hill they have to die on, because they need to win sports and tear it down or they will never win. Because as long as sports exist, social justice can never win, because artistically it stands as evidence that social justice does not work.
Yes.
The perfect example is Colin Kaepernick. If social justice worked, Colin Kaepernick would be Tom Brady. But Tom Brady is Tom Brady, and Colin Kaepernick is not.
You might say he's the Tom Brady of social justice.
Oh, he 100% is the Tom Brady of social justice.
Well, then he's Tom Brady.
Okay.
See, you've just played their game.
Yes.
But my point is, social justice does not work in reality.
Yes.
It moves you away from, if you were on a desert island, you would need morality in order to survive. Sports proves that if you were on a desert island, you would need morality to survive.
And how does Ayn Rand integrate that into a concept? Sanction of the victim.
Yes.
Right? You need, you can't, this side can't win unless they.
It's probably spam is what it is. That sucks.
Justin is getting the most epic phone call I've ever heard in my life.
Spam risk. And it paused the live video. Sorry about that, Instagram.
What the hell was that?
So my ringtone is Bobby Roode's theme song, entrance music, and WWE.
I think a insider just got an insight into your life that they did not need.
It's not... dude, okay, everyone out there, you have all these spam calls, right? It's ridiculous.
Yes.
One day it just started that, like, I would get, like, 5 spam calls a day, and they call and they're like, so this is the Social Security Administration. Please call back immediately to confirm your Social Security number.
Yeah.
Social Security Administration! You have the number!
We'll need your bank account information.
Yeah.
Mother's maiden name and blood type.
Stop trying to fuck with old people, telemarketers.
I have over 150 blocked numbers on my phone.
I have an app. AT&T has an app.
That's nice. All right. Well, I made my point. Moving on to the final story here. So the sex strike...
No, hold on. Sanction of the victim. I wanted to say something. This is why they wanted Tom Brady to just accept the punishment.
Genuflect.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
They thought if they could beat Tom Brady, they would have the sanction of the victim and everyone else would fall. But instead, Tom Brady, because he has... principles, because he was principle signaling.
It's not going to be a thing, man.
Let's not make that a thing.
Stop trying to make fetch happen, Gretchen.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was living by his principles, he didn't. And the only time he finally accepted a punishment where it got to the point that he was going to go against his principle of winning. And he had to pick one of the two. And he picked. And he did more for that. He did more for us and anti-social justice by not giving his sanction as a victim than anyone has done.
Hear, hear. Tom Brady. So the sex strike, not really going anywhere. So a Slate writer had a different idea, something she's calling the grandkid strike. So here's how this goes. It starts off, the actress and activist Alyssa Milano has drawn criticism in recent weeks for encouraging women to stop having sex in protest of abortion bans. It's reminding people that we have control over our own bodies and how to use them, she told the Associated Press, noting that the tactic has been used successfully to, by women's-led pacifist movements in Liberia and among the Iroquois. So, you know, massive success. Those
what did the Iroquois strike help them do? Make more corn?
Racist. My high school growing up was Iroquois West, and we were the Raiders, and it was the most racist thing ever. It was awesome. Those wins aside, sex strikes rest on some faulty premises.
Those wins aside. This is like the Cleveland Browns being like, we won 2 games 5 years ago.
But those wins aside.
Remember the 60s? Remember the 60s? Okay.
Remember Otto Graham?
That's right. So the sex strike rests on some faulty premises, according to this article, that women don't have sexual needs of their own, that sex is a gift for women to bestow upon others, and that women only have sex with men. Plus, here's an interesting fact, women and men in the U.S. have very similar views about abortion. Women are even slightly more likely to call themselves pro-life. The Republican men working to pass abortion bans are far more likely to be sleeping with women who share their opinions than those withholding sex for political reasons. So, what do
you... Wait. People have sex with people that share values with them?
This is breaking news.
Breaking news here in the Midside. We're first on this one.
Yeah.
But the author admits that the prospect of harnessing one's sexual and reproductive powers for social good is a tempting one. So she presents a strike that she calls the grandkid strike. It stems from this idea, but essentially the idea is that your parents really want to have grandchildren, and maybe they're moderately left but never would want to vote for a quote socialist, or maybe they're even Republican but not super in the bag for Trump and are a little reluctant, and essentially what you should do is start having conversations with them when they ask you about grandkids, and you say things like, well, I'm not sure it's right to bring a child into the world, you know, in these turbulent times with, you know, the lack of affordable health care and the idea that women can't get abortions and, of course, climate change. And the idea being that your parents would then...
When you say climate change, you have to do what Daniel just did on the video.
Climate change. So the idea being that then your parents would go, oh, I should change my political views to oust Trump and, I guess... stop weather, and then you'll have grandchildren, and hooray! Because otherwise, they'll be lonely old people. Justin, your parents are slightly right of center.
Are you currently in a grandkid strike? Is this an awkward conversation to be having on time delay as your girlfriend listens?
My girlfriend watches on Instagram and the other. I mean, putting this on Instagram, I mean, my girlfriend's actually going to pay attention to the show.
Oh! Burn! We don't need anything from the peanut sauce gallery.
So, I mean, you say the thing about my parents, and there's just so many things rushing through my head right now about this story. The first thing is... good, let them do this, because that means they're not going to be reproducing, which means in the long run, we win.
Yeah,
right?
Isn't that a thing to remember, is that you instill values on your children, and so if you don't have children, there's no one there to instill your values.
Right. So that's the first thing, is like, what William was saying earlier about like the reactionaryism and the pragmatism and the emotionalism, this is them using it against themselves. But then the second thing is, if your parents... are slightly left of center or slightly right of center, all you're going to do is turn them into my parents, or more accurately, you're going to turn them into Red Foreman on that 70s show, where he's going to be like, good, don't reproduce. If you're that much of a fucking idiot that you're not going to reproduce because I disagree with you, then you shouldn't have kids.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. William, have we stumbled upon the solution to global warming? Which is that if the left, just out of their concern for the environment, just chooses not to breed, 50% of the population will go away.
Thanos will get his dream.
And the world will be left to the right wing to inherit, and everyone will be happy.
Yeah, I think this may actually be more successful than you think, because, you know, you'll have the people who don't reproduce because their parents don't change their mind, but then you'll have the ones who supervise their completion of an absentee ballot that get arrested and put in prison. That's really in here. They're talking about supervising your parents' voting, absentee ballot voting. That's illegal. That's a federal crime. So it's gonna work. I think every social justice warrior should adopt exactly this, especially the part where you fraudulently interfere with the election.
That's
right. It's right there. I'm looking at it.
That is so awesome. This is ludicrous. So to be 10% more serious about this, and only 10% more serious, it is abhorrent to decide whether or not to have children, to decide whether or not to bring a life into the world based on your parents' voting record.
We talk all the time, like we joke about it because it's funny because it keeps coming up because it's true, that what the left and the social justice left accuse everyone of doing is these tactics that they use.
Yes.
This is gaslighting, isn't it?
Yes.
You're saying, oh, if only, you know, more people would vote for Hillary Clinton, then I would bring your grandkids into
That's
this
right.
world. Like, this is emotional manipulation.
Right, exactly. Thank you for saying that. Gaslighting and emotional manipulation, because something I want to be clear about with this article is they're not even going to directly say that. Think of what Daniel read. Oh man, you know, climate change is really bad. I don't know if I can bring someone into this world. Or man, with these Republican policies around all the time, I just don't know if this world, a child would work in this world. They're not even going to directly tell their parents. Their parents, the people who raised them, they're not even going to directly tell them, if you change your vote, I'll have grandkids.
I just can't imagine delaying something I would value to manipulate someone else.
That's kind of what I mean. Like, you're using your potential children as political pawns, not as, like, entities that will have their own life and values, and you want to bring them into the world because you love them and want to care about them, whatever. It is the most second-handed, immoral stance that I've heard in a long time from the left.
Okay, I challenge that. Which is more immoral?
Oh.
Remember that story from, what was it, 2 seasons ago, where the people were discussing not having kids because of global warming, right?
Yeah. He already forgot what happened on the show 2 minutes ago. Do you want to remember 2 seasons ago?
That's why I'm reminding him and the three new viewers from Instagram. Which is worse, right? The literal talking about, like, I'm never going to have kids because of global warming, or this. Right? I'm going to use my kids to manipulate.
I think this is worse.
Because at least in that instance, you're just making a sort of weird value judgment,
yeah,
which is strange. But the idea of, like,
yeah, but those
I'm
people
play...
are trying to advocate for people not having kids, right? They're,
that's true,
they're
too.
Sort of spreading their evil, too. I'm just saying, I'm agreeing with you, but I'm saying it's closer than you think.
It's not
right?
Like 70-30. It's like 55-40.
Yeah,
all right. But,
there we go.
Yeah, it's pretty evil. Stop it.
I mean, I think that's another reason these people shouldn't have kids.
Yeah,
I mean,
they can't, you know, think.
Well, right, they can't treat... Look, they're neither treating their parents or their kids as independent individuals.
Yeah.
So am I guilty because I've been on strike about being a breeder since, you know, I came out in college? Does that mean that I'm emotionally manipulating my parents?
Well, take this one step further, gay couples saying that they will... you know, impregnate women if their parent changes their vote.
Oh!
I just one up the social
justice. Yeah, man, you should write a comment on this story
see
if you could get...
Absolutely.
That would make a great great spoof piece, so a satire piece. So
a little funny movie. Yeah. Get on that.
Well, this is like a modest proposal, right?
That's right.
It's a fabulous proposal. All right, we can talk about this forever. I mean, these are some great stories, but we have some important reviews to do this week. Let's head into it in The Hopeful Romantic with JML.
Episode.
For some reason, because this episode is live, when I'm hearing these songs, I'm forgetting they're the bumpers, and I want to just keep listening to the song. Like, in the news, I expected the music to keep going.
Yeah, it's honestly better than the content. It's been an all-music show.
And when you started talking, I was just like, wait, whoa, podcast right now. Get in the podcast mode. So, I don't know. Right now, has anyone commented in Discord?
No, we're not on...
Oh, we're not broadcasting live on Discord? Oh, we're not broadcasting live on Discord.
It's the one platform we pimp all the time, the one we promote all the time.
But if you want to talk to us during the week, we posted a lot of the stories that we talked about this week in Discord. We got some content from Discord. The first trailer and trailer takedown this week was submitted by Midsider May, Frank, in Discord. So I invite you to join our Discord channel. It is, as Facebook dies and as Twitter is, you know, terrible, Discord is the main place I would love to interact with people from now on. So the more you join Discord, the more it makes my life better, it makes our lives better, and it will make your life better. So please join the Discord. So we got two reviews this week. One will make William proud of himself and feel like a genius, but also sad.
All right.
And the other is Daniel with his exclusive review.
So you can tune out for that.
With his exclusive review of Disneyland Star Wars Galaxy Edge. And we'll spend more time with that. But I want to start by talking about live action Aladdin. I saw it last night. And William?
You got to tell. Start off with what my prediction was.
It was a spoiler. You want to hit the spoiler thing?
There's walkers in the barn in Lori Spring.
When William, a couple weeks ago, was talking and he was like, saying, oh yeah, and at the end of the movie, Jasmine becomes Sultan. I immediately thought I had heard a spoiler because it seems so accurate.
Yeah.
And then the trailers came out where she's like, all I want to be is Sultan. And she does indeed become Sultan. Now, I will say that. That is the worst part.
I don't want to live on this planet anymore.
That is the worst part about this movie, okay? They give Jasmine a song.
The woman becoming the leader is the worst part of the movie.
No. Let me finish.
Lack of Gilbert Gottfried, is that the worst part of the movie?
Well, okay, fair. Fair.
Did she wear a pantsuit?
Well, actually,
Hillary Clinton.
They did have a rule, no midriff.
Balloons? Whoa.
Wait. No midriff?
There's no midriff. So Aladdin has a shirt on under his vest. Do you want to grab the pause right behind you?
Visual aids.
Visual aids for people. Just grab the Aladdin and Jasmine right in front of you on the second shelf.
Next to the tiger and the monkey.
Next to the tiger and the monkey. Do you know what Aladdin and Jasmine look like?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I saw this one and I was confused. I saw the one with the giant
head. For the listeners who aren't watching the live stream of this and you're just listening on iTunes or whatever platform on Monday morning, I'm holding my Aladdin Funko and my Jasmine Funko. So here, you see Aladdin's original costume. He has no shirt on.
Rubbing his nipples.
Yeah.
And then Jasmine, a very nice sexualized costume where you see her midriff, which is obviously not Islamic, right? I mean, she'd be stoned for this in real life.
Yeah.
Right. So they had a rule, no midriff, because they're trying to be culturally sensitive here by, you know, promoting feminism in Islam. But, so yeah, that was a rule, Daniel, where the no midriff. So the original costume design is not in there. But that's the thing about the whole movie that I want to be clear about with the whole Jasmine becoming Sultan thing is the worst part of the movie is that they did that and that they gave her new songs about, like, I won't remain speechless anymore. And when Jafar makes himself Sultan, this is the worst scene in the movie, and they could have just cut this and it would have really not done anything. When Jafar becomes Sultan, the king of the guards, the captain of the guards, is still going to follow him because he only follows the Sultan. And then Jasmine is taken away. And she has this moment where she thinks to herself, no, I'm not going to remain speechless anymore. And she starts singing her song, Speechless. And then the people literally, all the guards that are holding her in the back, literally get Thanos. And what I mean by that is they just poof and disappear. And then at another point, Jafar actually makes, like, Raja disappear too, like, in Thanos. But makes them disappear. And then she goes forward and appeals to the guard and appeals to his principles. Which, that's why this is not as bad, right? Because she's actually standing up for something good. Jafar actually is evil, and he actually is a dictator, and he actually is literally a fascist.
But what if he's doing it for climate change?
Well,
okay.
That's a different story, okay. But he's not. Okay. And that's the thing that's overall is good about this movie that I don't want to distract from, is it does keep the original theme of Aladdin. It does keep the original point. And it actually almost integrates it in a better way, where the movie becomes about what you're born into and how that affects who you become and what you do in life. So we know the whole thing is Aladdin's born poor, so he thinks he can't do anything great. And Jasmine is born as a princess, so she can't become a sultan. And because she's a girl, she can't do anything great. She's stuck in her role, mm-hmm. right? And it's the same thing with Jafar. Jafar makes a point of saying, I grew up the same way as you, Aladdin. I was a thief as well. And I have to use these manipulative, underhanded ways. So in a way, even though the movie is preaching towards social justice, it's contradicting it, because Jafar is really a social justice villain. You know, I grew up poor. This is the only way to get ahead in the system, is I have to become the oppressor rather than the oppressed. It's Jafar is using the Marxist narrative. Now, do I think this is intentional? No. I think the original Aladdin is just so good, it's impossible to really fuck up this story. You can't really go too far away from what this story is about.
What does Aladdin end up at the end if he's not the sultan?
Well, okay. So
they make him a prince at the end of the
Disney. No, he never. Right. Look, in the original fucking movie, they don't even get married.
Yeah, I know. But
at the end of this one?
No, yeah. The point is, in the Disney movie, right, it's not that they make him a prince, right? But they say, you can be together, right?
Right. Like at the end of the movie, the sultan says, because the movie's Aladdin and it's not Jasmine, at the end of the movie, he says, he has proven himself to be a great man. I know Aladdin is a great man, so the princess from now on has enough efficacy that she can choose whoever she wants to marry. And people forget, right, because they're doing this Jasmine plot in the new one, they forget that that's a powerful moment, especially for an Islamic country.
Yeah.
Jasmine has a win, and that's a big character arc for her, that she gets to choose who she wants to marry. That's huge. The fact that they had to go even further shows that these people are concrete-bound thinkers and they're not thinking about the principles of the original movie. But yeah, and at the end, he says that, and the princess can choose to marry whoever she wants. Now, this movie does the same ending, it just does it slightly differently. Where at the end, he goes, well, you, through your speech, of your song or speeches, have proven to me that you have great character. So you are going to be the next sultan. And by the way, the sultan can change any law he wants about marriage, so you can marry whoever you want. So it doesn't really change the story. All that they've done is added in this stupid little scene with convincing the captain of the guard, which is very innocuous compared to like turning Gaston into a murderer. It's a much different thing. Now, as far as the overall movie, it's very enjoyable. Will Smith is very funny. Once he comes into the movie, all the performances are tremendous. Naomi Scott as Jasmine is good. Everything is good. That's the only kind of weak spot of it is Jafar is, and I think this is more a result of what I think the problem with all of these live action Disney live action remakes are. Jafar is very underdeveloped, and I don't think he's cast properly. But they're trying to draw a contrast between the fact that he's young and good looking, and Aladdin's young and good-looking, and the way this is being used against each other. They didn't want him to be the old guy. They wanted to have that parallel with Aladdin, where he came up similar to Aladdin but went on a different path, which makes sense from an integration standpoint. But the problem with these movies is they can't integrate because their budgets are hamstrung. Because Disney is spending all the money on building these sets. They rebuilt the entire Agrabah marketplace. They rebuilt the castle. In the same way, the palace, in the same way that Beauty and the Beast rebuilt the French village and rebuilt the castle there too. Sorry, they're always castles.
Same rebuilt, but you mean just built, right?
I think it means rebuilt, like from the
Right. They didn't build a new one; they just made it look like that. I mean, even the Cape of Wonders, right? Like one of the big things about the Cape of Wonders in the original movie is when you put the scarab and it comes out of there. The Cape of Wonders is just there, and anyone can walk into it in this world. Which kind of kills the entire point of the movie, because the entire point of the movie is this hidden thing that Jafar has discovered.
Yeah.
Now anyone could just go there and it's just a fixture of Agrabah. But that's just because they don't have the money to do all these special effects, because the entire budget's been spent on the sets.
Well, I haven't seen the movie yet, but that was my concern with not having Iago in there, right? Like, Abu helps you develop Aladdin, and Iago helps you develop Jafar, right? Like, Iago can completely be, you know, nothing, a nothing character, right? Because he's a parrot and whatever. But through his interactions with Jafar is how you develop that.
And they have a little bit of that, to be fair. Iago does talk, but he's more of like a traditional parrot where he's just parroting things back. But the big thing he parrots back is they actually have Abyss Maul in this. So for the huge Aladdin nerds out there, in Return of Jafar, Abyss Maul is the one who discovers the lamp that Jafar's in as a genie and releases him, and that's how Jafar tries to get his revenge on Aladdin and everyone. But they have him in the movie, and the whole thing about Jafar is he does not want to be second place. He does not, which works at the end where, you know, you find out, oh, you're not the most powerful creature, the genie is. And he becomes a genie. And Iago, when Abyss Maul says that, he's like, you know, Abyss Maul's like, you're still second to the Sultan. And Iago's like, all right, second place. All right, second place. And then Jafar gets really mad. So they do have that a little bit with Iago. He's just not the same sort of character, which, again, are they going to be able to do Return of Jafar live action because Iago is such a big character in that? I don't know. But they do. The other thing is, I'm really glad they did Abu. Because it's exactly what you just said.
Yeah.
The fucking stage musical pisses me off so much because the entire point of Aladdin is his only friend is Abu, and then the genie is his first real friend who learns about him and appreciates him for who he is and gets to know him.
Which is funny because the genie is a fantastical creature, so.
Right.
His first real friend.
Right.
Is an apparition.
Right. So the fact that they still had Abu in there and they developed him in that way and they used him in that way, it works. So the. I don't know. As an Aladdin fan, there's a lot I could be mad about if I chose to go this way of people who are upset about it's not the same. But if you understand the limitations someone like Guy Ritchie is working with and you appreciate it for what he is and what he's able to achieve. And when I say limitations, I mean budget. I mean Disney rules like midriffs. And I mean the current prevailing social justice culture. I think this is an accomplishment in today's day and age.
Congratulations. You weren't terrible.
Yeah, 100%.
So you should see it if...
You should see it if you like the original Aladdin and you're going to just enjoy it and have a fun time and you're going to be able to put aside the Jasmine song because it's pretty innocuous. And
so there, I should wait for Netflix so I could just fast forward through that part?
Yeah, you could fast forward through it. But oh, also
sorry, Disney Plus. Disney Plus, sorry.
Let's all go to the lobby. That's what you should sing on your way out during that song.
Right. But also understand that, you know, in a culture such as this, feminism is important. It does matter. True, traditional, original feminism would matter at this point. Mm-hmm. So there is elements of reality in there as well. And you have to know the line between social justice and the legitimate amounts of these causes. But don't see this movie if you're just not going to like live-action reboots and you just are going to compare it to the original. It's not as good as the original. It's never going to be as good as the original. None of these live-action remakes are going to be as good as the original. And I'm not looking forward to The Lion King at all. I'm sorry, it looks terrible. I don't know how they're going to do any of the songs.
It's going to be too creepy, Valley.
Yeah.
It can't be done. It just can't be done.
Can't be done.
Well, we'll see. I'll see it and I'll review it on here, but I'm doing that for you, not for me.
Now we're time for the longer review Disneyland.
Buckle up.
I talk about Aladdin forever, and he can probably talk about Star Wars more than I can talk about Aladdin.
I'll keep it pithy. Okay, so... I'm in L.A., or Anaheim, this is technically
Orange County. Everyone calls it L.A., but it's not.
This is not L.A.
Okay. Yeah. Thank God.
I'm in the dump because earlier this week a friend of mine texted me and said, hey, I can get you into Star Wars Galaxy's Edge, which is the newest Disneyland park, early, before it opens to the public. It opens later this month to the public. And I'm a huge Star Wars nerd, and I decided that sounds like a good use of many hundreds of dollars to fly across the country last second, and so I did. So I got to go in and see this much-awaited 3-year-long process of building Star Wars Galaxy's Edge, and I'm going to talk about it a little. Do you have any place you want me to start in particular?
Tell us your first impression when you walked in. Was it something like this?
It was something like that. My first impression of walking in was this is radically different from anything Disney has ever done. And it's radically different because while the parks are all themed, this is not only themed, it is intricately immersive. Everything in this entire park is designed to be part of this universe. from, you know, light cords and trash cans and various corners where you can just sit and take photos or whatever. Like, everything is intricately designed to transport you to the planet of Batu, which is the place you're going on Galaxy's Edge. And specifically, this is a part of Batu called Black Spire Outpost, which is like it's supposed to be reminiscent of Mos Eisley in a certain sense, maybe a little less busy than that.
Until everyone goes there,
and then you will not be able to move. So it's insanely immersive. They've done a really good job of realizing the Star Wars universe, which is not at all, bright and shiny and new and whatever. Like, everything is majorly distressed, and there are blaster marks in places, and things are sort of like falling down because Star Wars is supposed to be a long time ago, but in a very war-torn, sort of neglected universe. And they have captured that exquisitely. So
when you say that, that's one of the things that appeals to me about this as a non-Star Wars fan.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like they're taking what makes Disney great and improving on it and updating it for the modern era. Because one of the critiques of the parks in general is that all the technology is old and it's not as immersive anymore because
Yes. People
can just get that kind of stuff at home. Whereas, you know, you go to a Six Flags, you go to a Busch Gardens, you go to any of these other theme parks, they're not as immersive as Disney. And to hear that they're making this more immersive still, as a non-Star Wars fan, that makes me want to go.
It's very cool, and there are elements we couldn't test, because one of the things when we walked in is we had to put our phones in these opaque bags and seal them, and we were not allowed to touch or look at or take photos of anything during our time in there. So one of the things that we couldn't take advantage of is throughout the park there are really well-integrated, essentially QR codes, but they just look like the language of the world and whatever, and they apparently have a Disney Parks app.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're going through, like, there's going to be stuff going on all over through augmented reality that's happening all the time on the app. And it's integrated everywhere. Like, everywhere you turn, there's different stuff that you can scan that I didn't get to because no photos.
That's probably presumably their response to, in Harry Potter World, you can use the wands you buy to make things happen around the park.
Yeah, I think so. So let me talk about a few specific things. I'll try to keep it as short as possible. So the one thing that it's an immersive experience, but one thing I'll say is there's not a lot of attractions per se. There's two rides, one of which is not open right now. That's called Rise of the Resistance. That opens in the fall. But the major ride is the Millennium Falcon Smuggler's Run. And you round the corner, and there, in its full two-scale glory, is an entire Millennium Falcon. Like, the entire ship docked. And it's made my heart go pitter-patter seeing it in real life. And then the ride, which I won't spoil for anyone, but everyone sort of knows the main portion of it, is
you female can instantly pilot it as good as...
He's going to do this with everything now.
I'm going to predict. I'm getting so good at predicting these things now.
The ride is, without giving away the story, you get to be part of the Millennium Falcon.
And you instantly pilot better than Han Solo.
Well...
I mean, that is the premise of the entire new trilogy, right?
There are pilots, gunners, and engineers, and it's sort of like you all have to work together to accomplish something.
It's like the Mission to Mars in Epcot.
Mission to Mars in Epcot, yeah.
And I will only say, without spoiling specific elements from the story, the pilots can seriously F up the mission. Like, they can be bad pilots, and it can be a bad experience if they're bad.
Did you ever, because you went on it like 8 times.
I went on it like 6 times, never got to be the pilot.
Did you ever have a bad pilot?
Like, we had bad pilot 4 of 6 times.
So you had a lot of Asian female pilots.
We had a lot of... For a reason, because we went on the single rider line a lot, when we got up to the top, they handed the old people the piloting cue. And they were, like, just sitting there, and there would be things like, press this button. And they'd be like, huh? What? Like, press the button! And we're screaming at them, like, what? And then the mission was ruined.
And then they went home the next day and died happy. Because
this
is what they were waiting for the rest of their lives.
That's right. So it's sort of randomly assigned. But it's very cool. And it has different endings and different possibilities based on how you do and various things. So
cool.
It's very immersive.
Well, it's a way to get people to go in the park multiple times, right?
Yes. Yeah. It's not the same ride every time.
Yeah.
That's
they do that with Star Tours too, right? Where it's like a different random combination.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes you get Jar Jar Binks.
Right.
Oh, lordy.
No, you never want Jar Jar Binks. So, other than that, there are no other rides at all.
Interesting.
There are other features, I guess. So, like, there's a cantina, which is supposed to be reminiscent of the Mos Eisley Cantina, but is not the Mos Eisley Cantina. It is really effing small. And even when we
were
there...
That's what she said.
When there's essentially, quote-unquote, no one in the park, it was still like a 45-minute wait to get in, and they closed the line at 45 minutes. They won't let even let you in the line because the line area is so small. They didn't really
Seems
think that
like
one
a
out.
Mistake.
They didn't think that one out. They didn't think how popular that was going to be. It's wildly popular. But you go in, and it's remarkably cool. It's you know, there's it's
well,
adult
you know, that's,
drinks
that's been a
and
kind of a
drinks.
That's been kind of a pattern with Disney, is they don't want the original trilogy things to be popular,
yes.
But that's exactly what is popular.
Yes.
So even if you say this is not the Mos Eisley Cantina, people still want it because they want the Mos Eisley Cantina, right? So
well,
they want
the
Millennium
Falcon. Do you also think they're playing for the long term? And in the beginning, all of this is going to be like overloaded, but in a couple years, everything's going to die down and it'll be more reasonable to get in there.
Maybe. I mean, not maybe, certainly. But whether or not they're planning for the future. I mean, I'll talk about that in 1 second. The last thing I'll say is there are essentially two other things for you to do, one of which is called Zabby's Droid Workshop. It's essentially, as Justin put it yesterday, Build-A-Bear for droids, where you pay $99
to get
in to build your droid, and that gives you the baseline droid parts, and then you can have all these add-ons that you can add to your droid. You can build your own astromech droid, essentially. It's a BB unit or an R2 unit or an R5 unit, something like that. And then you customize it for however you want. And, like, they actually move and crap. Like, the BB-8 ones move just like BB-8 moves. It's insane.
That's pretty cool.
And then there's, I forget the name of it, but there's the lightsaber workshop, which is $200
to get in the door.
That's your baseline lightsaber, and then there's also add-ons for that. So the droid workshop, you can at least walk in and see everything going on. It's also a merch shop. The lightsaber one, you cannot go in unless you pay the $200. They are just going to milk Star Wars fans for every penny. That's more than it costs to get into Disneyland. $200 on top of your ticket to build a lightsaber. Other than that, the stuff, like, all the merch stuff is really built into the world. Like, they're not these floating kiosks around that are weird. Like, there's this the bazaar area that's, like, hustle and bustle and has, like, little built-in bodegas, like, into the walls and stuff.
Can you parkour through it like Aladdin?
You may. In fact, it's small enough. Be able to parkour through it. But it's very cool. They have people walking around, like, First Order troopers who are, like, harassing the people in lines and stuff. They pull people out of line and, like, put you against the wall, like, ask for your credentials and stuff. Like, it's cool. And then I got to meet Rey, and that made my life. But
not actually Daisy Ridley.
No, just someone who looked a little bit like Daisy Ridley. But I was wearing a Millennium Falcon shirt that was like a schematic. And she's like, how did you get plans for my ship? Are you some sort of spy? You know, whatever. So it was kind of fun. So here's my overall thing. It's a remarkable experience. Disney has done an insane job of putting you in the Star Wars universe. But here, and this relates to your point, William, is where I don't know where this goes, which is that they are very purposely not replicating the stuff from the original movies. They're sort of evoking it. Like, obviously the Millennium Falcon is from the original movies, but even the story has nothing to do with the original movies. You see Chewbacca, but there's no mention of Han Solo. There's no mention of Luke Skywalker. There's no mention of Leia. There's no mention of Lando. There's no mention of anything from the original movies. It's all the new movies, and in fact, they even dialed that down a bit, because this is supposed to be at Galaxy's Edge. And apparently from leaked discussions about what the next movies are going to be, they want to set these movies in the Star Wars galaxy, but on, like, an opposite end of, like, where the Empire is, or where the, like, where people have never heard of Jedi, never heard of Sith, never heard of the Skywalkers. And so the question becomes, well, what is Star Wars if you remove Skywalkers and Solo and Sith and Jedi and lightsabers? What is it? Just big weird letters and scrolling text at the beginning of a movie.
Well, and the similar aesthetic. It's very surface level. It's confusing the concrete for the abstract. I mean, it's very much what we were talking about earlier. Emotionalism, pragmatism.
Yeah.
It's where our culture is.
With such a developed canon And I know they tossed it out and made it the extended universe, but with such a developed canon, it seems like a huge mistake, doesn't it?
It does seem like a huge mistake. Now, again, this what they did, to be on their terms, like you would judge art, what they were trying to execute, they executed extraordinarily well.
Yeah.
And no matter what you think of their decision to forego the original trilogy, I think you will have a good time going there, and it will be really cool. One of the cooler theme park experiences.
So I'm going to ask you a question then, because what you just described is similar to how I would describe a Marvel movie.
Mm-hmm.
If you go and you see Endgame, you're not going to have a bad time. You're just going to be like, oh, you know, that was enjoyable. But if you go under the hood and you look at what's really going on, it's just the McDonald's of movies.
This is more, I don't know, the Morton Steakhouse of theme park. Like,
so this is, so it continues with my theory that the best thing Disney is doing right now is the theme parks.
Yeah. That, but my first thought, and what I said to my friend, and there was a survey that we were supposed to take, so there are two things. One, the cantina music is awful. It's techno crap. And in fact, if you go into the bathrooms, it's going to sound really dumb, they have like basically fake alien folk music in the bathrooms. And the first thing I wanted him to put on the survey was switch music in bathrooms and cantina. Because the bathroom music is cantina music. But
they're never, that's never going to happen, though, because they've gone all in on that DJ character.
Yeah, there's a DJ in the cantina, who's the exclusive Funko Pop as well. But the music's terrible. But two is, it's immersive. It's like 14 acres, so it's huge. But because Star Wars itself is so scaled, it feels small. And it, to me... And I have no data. I'm not looking at what Disney is looking at in terms of sales and percentages, whatever. It seems like a missed opportunity to not just do an entire Disney park instead of just a section of Disneyland.
Maybe an entire Disney Star Wars park?
Yes. Just like California Adventure or Animal Kingdom.
I mean, I don't think they could have done that in Florida. I mean, sorry, in California. Yeah. I don't think they have enough space in the dump. But in Florida, I think they probably have enough space they could have done that.
Yeah, and just thinking about all the stuff that you have in all of the movies, where you could have distinct, you could make it sort of like a, you know, a quasi time travel theme, where you're like going through the Star Wars universe from prequels to the new movies, and had all this crazy content to work
on. I want to ride a pod race.
Yes, where's the pod race ride? Exactly.
They could do that, and you go to all the different planets and everything.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh my god, it'd be amazing.
How many kids would love to go to the Ewok Endor?
Oh, it would be ludicrous. I mean, kids.
But, and you would keep midgets employed forever.
But this is the thing that I don't understand is that none of that, with Kathleen Kennedy, none of that is important, right? Like, we're purposely destroying all of that for some reason. Like, if I could see it if you want to take the show in. Or if you want to build in some new direction, right? Like, but it's very unclear what is the direction, other than the Force being female, what is the direction, right?
The Force is female. But it just seems like a missed opportunity to me in that, yes, you can build in a new direction, but you have all this existing content, all this existing nostalgia and characters.
Yeah,
and
why not capture
merch.
That money and put it to the Force being female?
So much money being left on the table. So it's a phenomenal experience. It's not the original trilogy. So don't go in there expecting that. It should be bigger.
Do you think it appeals more to people like me, or not to say as strongly as me, because I'm more on the extreme of, like, I don't really even like original Star Wars, but more to the people who are like, oh, it's cool to like Star Wars now, so they know a little bit about it, but they don't know a shitload about it like you do. So it seems like... They were never going to appease people like you, because we know the way these fucking fans go insane and make these petitions and everything.
Are you kidding? If they had like a VR lightsaber duel attraction or something, like, I would have paid $200 to get in. It would have been...
Okay, but you get the point I'm making. You're more rational. I was using you as an example of the hardcore fans. I don't think they were ever going to satisfy them. So if they
Endor speeder rides.
Look, I'm with you.
Racing.
But I'm not the target audience.
I think Kessel Run to bring in Solo.
Or am I the target audience? That's the point I'm making.
You are the target audience.
Yes.
That's the difference, I think, between Lucasfilms, sort of the way they did things, and Disney, the way like the new Disney Lucasfilm was doing things. And I'm going to call a false dichotomy on this. It's not about just appealing to normies and giving up on the fans, right? Like, you can do both, right? Like, there's ways to do both, right?
I agree.
And yes, there are always going to be some, like, 0.01% of fans that just are going to be, like, the comic book guy in The Simpsons. That's fine. But if they had done any of those sort of things, like any... like you were describing, the lightsaber thing would be awesome, right? Like, an original Star Wars fan would just love to do that, right?
Oh, no, I agree it's a false dichotomy, but I think Disney holds a false dichotomy. I don't think we...
Yeah, they definitely do. They don't... They want to separate themselves from the fandom.
Yeah. Weird. And speaking of separating yourself from the fandom, I think that transitions perfectly into Trailer Takedown, in the first trailer we're going to watch here together. Usually I put the trailers up on Saturday morning. You can watch them right now if you want to pause the episode. Or, you know, you can watch them during the episode. However you want to do it, you go to themidside.com or themidside.com/podcast. But right now, we are going to watch these trailers live together. So if you're listening to the show, you're just going to hear the trailer. And we might get a copyright strike, apparently. Yes. So this is our fifth strike. So we're going
to... Will we get a copyright strike for the trailer?
The audio, yeah.
But don't they want it to be out there everywhere all the time under any circumstance?
No. That's not how that works.
It won't be on our the actual podcast. So I'm going to do this. We're going to watch this together. You're going to get our reactions. So you should have watched this live, because otherwise you won't be able to see the reactions. All right.
Trailer Takedown. First trailer.
The first trailer is... the teaser for Star Trek Picard.
"15 years ago, today, you led us out of the darkness. You commanded the greatest rescue armada in history. Then...
faith in Star Trek.
Your faith in yourself. Tell us, why did you leave Starfleet, Admiral?
Patrick Stewart looks fucking old.
I think that's on purpose. He's supposed to be like 150,000 years old, right?
Is he? Okay, the first question I have for you, William, is what the fuck was the rescue?
So
was that Star Trek Nemesis?
No. So here's the thing. We're in the Prime. So there's the Prime canon.
Right.
We're in this alternate universe where the Romulan homeworld was blown up.
This is the J.J. Abrams world?
Yes.
So this is Star Trek Picard taking place in J.J. Abrams' world.
Not quite. So it's confusing. So... Here's the thing. There's the J.J. Abrams license, and then there's the Bad Robot, which is often referred to as a Bad Reboot license. The Bad Reboot license has to be 25% different than
the original canon. But J.J. Abrams owns Bad Robot.
Okay, but it's a different license. The film license is different than the TV license.
Oh, for the love of fucking God.
So the way they sell it to the fans is they say this is part of the Prime canon, meaning not the J.J. Abrams verse, but the Prime canon. But it's not the real canon. It still has to be 25% different. It's the same license agreement, just with the for television. So
this doesn't have anything to do with the original Next Generation.
Here's what I would say: there's a comic book that supposedly explains this by the Romulan homeworld gets blown up. Spock or somebody goes back in time and kicks off this alternate timeline, right? And that's where we are. So they would try to explain to you that this is still canon, but it's really not.
Okay, so for anyone not watching and listening, I look dumbfounded right now because I don't understand this at all.
So I don't know for sure, but I'm assuming they're referring to that they tried to rescue Romulan.
So the Romulans live in France now, or
no? So okay, so, all right. Let's talk about the trailer now. Let's make a Star Trek that's not Star Trek. He's not in Starfleet, and he's just...
We already did that. It's called Star Trek Discovery.
Right. But they're doing even worse. They're doubling down on it. It's like, let's have Picard just live in a vineyard in France, his family's vineyard.
This is, like, the only thing that's good about this trailer is, like, they didn't fuck it up by not having Patrick Stewart be Picard. That it was somebody else. I got to see that and I was like, oh my god, thank god it's Patrick Stewart. But otherwise, there's literally nothing appealing to me about this.
It's funny you say that. So I've been following this closely, and there's been a lot of leaks about the production troubles. And
can you hit tackle for me first?
Yeah.
Tackle!
So, yeah, it's worse than you think, is what I was trying to say. Daniel.
Okay, so as one of the few people who liked the J.J. Abrams stuff, save for the last, most recent
The movies, you
one?
Mean?
Yes.
Not STD.
Correct, the movies.
You liked the one, you didn't like the one that was about 9/11, right?
What?
With Benedict Cumberbatch, the entire movie's about 9/11.
Oh, I didn't like that one.
Yeah.
Right, I liked the first reboot movie, I guess, the only one. I liked that.
Oh no, that's not the most recent. The most recent was with Idris Elba.
Isn't the most recent one have like motorcycles in it and they're like doing jumps off of things?
Yeah, that's with Idris Elba where they go to the planet with him. Remember?
Yeah, I don't like that one, and I didn't really like the Benedict Cumberbatch one because they basically decimated Khan as a character.
Right, they turned him into Osama bin Laden. That's the 9/11 one.
Yeah, that was weird. So I liked the first, I guess I only liked the first reboot. Other than that, they've been crap. This is, at least I like Picard. I like Next Generation. I like Picard, so maybe this would be interesting. I'm not anywhere near as big a Star Trek fan as I am Star Wars. So the Discovery show looks terrible and likely is terrible. I loved the movies with Picard. I even liked Nemesis. But I really liked First Contact.
Did you just say, okay, he liked Nemesis?
I liked Nemesis. Oh, I didn't think it was a great movie, but I liked it. It was
fine. Was it Riker who was, like, old and fat and, like, tries to jump in the Jeffrey suit, but it's just ridiculous in Nemesis?
I mean, look, there's a little ridiculousness in it, but... But I really liked First Contact.
Yeah, First Contact is tremendous.
Great, great movie. Even, like, don't even look at it as a Star Trek movie, just a great movie.
Yeah.
My only complaint with Nemesis was that it's very un-Picard. Like, it makes sense, but it needed a little more build-up, like, before he goes all, like...
Yeah.
Crazy.
Fine. So, I don't know. I'm sort of tentatively hugging this.
Hug?
Daniel, you can review it, because I'm not going to watch this. William?
My views on Bad Reboot are pretty well publicized on Twitter. I do not want to support this. This is... the production, it's if you're interested, there's a great series on Midnight's Edge, and if you want a hilarious version, you can watch Doomcock on YouTube explain it. But basically, this has been plagued by delays getting this started because, A, Patrick Stewart is expensive, so they want to make sure they had the licensees in place. But they couldn't get any of the licensees because the original pitch was... we're going to have Picard be in charge of section whatever it is from Deep Space Nine.
31?
Yeah.
That was the original Bashir? Were they going to have Bashir in it?
No. It was supposed to be Picard in charge of a division of section 31.
But how do you do that series without putting Bashir in it?
They want to subvert it. This is all about subverting expectations. They wanted to make Picard evil. They also wanted to make all the stuff look like Discovery, which, because the Discovery toys are all flopping, none of the licensees signed on. So the only reason this is in production right now is at the last minute Amazon said, okay, well, we'll take international rights for it. Because Netflix wouldn't take it after the flop of Discovery season one.
Wow.
Netflix wouldn't take it. No one would take it. They did bridge episodes between season one and season two, and they tried to sell them, and nobody bought them, so they had to give them for free. So this is all about propping up CBS All Access. So they will spend any amount of money to prop this up. They're even counting subscribers. CBS is counting... They count subscribers as not only people who have subscribed, but also subscribed and then canceled. They just call them, like, retired subscribers or something like that. I can't remember the exact term, but...
I did that.
Yeah.
I think I did that for the Super Bowl.
So, yeah. Not interested in this. I cannot tackle this any harder.
Tackle!
In today's day and age, wouldn't the logical thing be to bring back Sisko? Even at the end of his show, he said, I'll be back at some point. I don't know when, but I'll be back. You're going to make a black male captain lead, and it fits with the narrative and everything.
They can't, though. The license prevents it. It has to be 25% different.
You can make it 25% different. He's one of the prophets, and he can fucking change the universe.
But imagine the complications of... So, Why, as a producer, would you go through all the trouble of trying to redesign everything to be 25% different on Bejor when you can just go somewhere else?
That's what I'm saying.
That's what they're doing constantly. They're just going somewhere else.
You bring Sisko back, but you just put him somewhere in the Delta Quadrant, and you set the show there. That's what I would do. That's the easiest thing to do, and it would be more marketable in today's day and age.
Second trailer.
We're going to watch Terminator Dark Fate, official teaser.
Two days ago, I had this nice, simple life. And now it's a nightmare.
That's the podcat eating in the background, if you want.
This is boring so far, yeah. This looks like a weird Mad Max where they're just like on the road and like. Was that Kaylee? What's her name? I mean, that looks kind of cool.
Didn't we already do this movie?
Yeah, it's called Terminator 2.
Well, I think this takes place right after Terminator 2.
Don't tell me.
Who do you think it was?
I'm a Terminator.
I think he's in this. Oh no, it's that other girl from The Middleman.
Who are you? My name is Sarah Connor.
Producer James Cameron returns.
Almost human.
Now we just, you know, it's like The Dark Knight Returns. We just say the producers, though.
I am human. Why do you care what happens to her? Because I was her.
Oh, good lines.
Arnold. Terminator Dark Fate. Okay, so no. I guess this takes place like immediately after Terminator 2, but what I'm really confused about this is where's John Connor? John Connor. I was gonna say John Carter, but that movie bombed.
Yeah.
But I don't understand this at all. Like, this seems to be pandering because it was all women fighting against the evil white male. Now, they were all white women, I think. Maybe. There might have been one minority in there. But this just seemed like senseless action.
Senselessness.
Yeah. It just, yeah. There's nothing. I mean, look, if I want something, if we're going to go this route where we're going to go with, like, everything is just visual eye candy and there's no, like, meaning behind it, I don't think anything's going to beat the trailer for the new Godzilla as far as that goes. When you talk about just visually, like,
thank goodness he's on our side.
Yeah. It's stupid, but visually it's tremendous. I look at this and visually this does nothing for me. And there's no depth to it either. I don't know what's going on. I don't know why Sarah Connor's there. Where's John Connor? Why Arnold's there? Who this new guy is? Why they're trying to kill this girl? There's nothing. There's nothing for me. Will I see it? I don't even know if I'm going to see this. By the time this comes out, I might just be like, fuck reviewing shit for the sake of reviewing it. So I'm going to... This is a tackle.
Tackle.
Look, there's a fandom for everything. We said that earlier, right? And there are now far too many franchises for me to keep up with. Not only do I not know anything, I have no idea even how to know things. Like, I wouldn't know what movies to watch to catch me up to know what is going on in this franchise. I am so far removed from the Terminator universe that I don't know what the timeline is. I barely know who the characters are anymore. There's just way too much. And I guess there are some people keeping this alive, apparently, who love the Terminator franchise or are all into it. But I don't see any Terminator conventions going on. I don't see a Terminator land being built at Universal Studios. So.
They had the ride at Six Flags Magic Mountain, but then they rethemed it and it's not Terminator anymore. But yeah. Originally those videos and everything on that ride were all Christian Bale and stuff, and now it's...
But apparently someone is keeping this alive.
I mean, James Cameron, probably.
But not at a loss.
Well, right? I think the difference is people fetishize James Cameron so much that they will see his stuff regardless of anything. It's just, oh, it's James Cameron, so it must be good.
I guess, but I can't follow, and I don't even know how I would begin to follow. So... Tackle.
So I was looking it up here. Tencent Pictures. That's who's paying for it.
Who is that?
Tencent Pictures. They're a huge media company. They actually also own Riot Games.
Oh.
So China. So
China.
This movie is for the Chinese market, so don't expect it to make sense or have any connection to
good.
Anything.
Well, right, because even if you look at Endgame,
I feel better.
Most of the money that Endgame made was for markets.
Yep. So this is for foreign markets. This is not for us.
Great.
So,
tackle. Feel better.
Tackle.
Third
trailer.
We're going to watch a sci-fi trailer called Freaks. I included this in here for William for sci-fi.
Moving through something.
Sci-fi or
bubbles.
Bubbles? What are you doing? Someone could have seen you. You love a punishment for breaking the rules.
No, Dad!
Open the door. You almost got us killed.
So it's like The Quiet Place and all these other movies, except that they can't go outside?
Well, she can't go outside.
This is not a game. Did you go outside?
No.
You can never lie to me.
I'm not lying.
What's in an ice cream truck? Frozen kid bodies.
Come Jesus inside. Christ.
You taste any flavor you want.
Daddy, are you okay? What happened?
You use the term freaks. Any freaks who are running loose are illegal.
You better get away from my house.
Is it a room, man? Yeah.
I don't want to hide anymore.
Was this sci-fi?
Well, knowing it's supposed to be sci-fi, see, it says sci-fi horror there, and knowing the word freaks, I'm only forced to assume this is another riff on the whole X-Men concept of mutants becoming illegal. That's the only thing I can assume it's supposed to be. It seemed kind of like they were riffing off of that whole Gypsy Rose thing, where the guy is like, oh, I have to take care of you and keep you in seclusion, and I'm crazy, blah, 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 and that's where the horror elements come in. And also the horror is this is presumably a dystopia. There's no-
Maybe they're illegal... Aliens.
Oh, literal aliens?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean... God damn it, Tackle.
Tackle.
WTF? Tackle.
Tackle.
I would like more sci-fi and less horror, please.
Tackle.
All right, the final trip...
you talked before I could press the button.
Trailer.
I wasn't mad. I was the one who made the mistake. We're going to watch here The Art of Self-Defense starring Jesse Eisenberg. This is described as a dark comedy. And I'm hoping I can get out of having to choose one of these to watch. I'm hoping that...
So this would be dark like the Battle for Winterfell?
No.
So the lighting will be
appropriate. It's a no-lighting comedy.
Right, it's a no-lighting comedy. Comedy in the dark.
Okay, got it.
But I'm hoping this gets me out of...
I had the first one.
Yeah, I had the first one.
So, but William and I have tackled everything so far, so hopefully this can bail us out.
That's a comedy.
Karate's a way of communicating. Ask me a question. What are
I
your plans
rather
for
be
the
watching Cobra Kai.
I'm going to do some grocery shopping and rent a film to watch in the comfort of my home.
Is he channeling Zap Brannigan?
I want you to tell me why you're here.
I'm afraid. I'm afraid of the dark. I'm afraid of other men. I want to be what intimidates me.
You came to the right place.
Sinister dark woman.
Today. Your new white belt?
Is that the first belt color?
White is before color. You haven't earned color yet.
Today's lesson. Kick with your fists and punch with your feet.
That makes perfect sense.
Good. There's a mental component as well. Everything should be as masculine.
So they keep putting up quotes, and every
want to start on those reports. That
every quote makes me want to like the movie less.
I won't be paying you anymore. This is for your own good.
They say everything must be as masculine as possible.
Yeah, let's rewind this.
No. Yeah.
Should be. There's a mental component as well. Everything should be as masculine as possible.
Uh-oh.
You may want to start on those reports. That pile is getting awfully high. I won't be petting you anymore. This is for your own good.
That's what Justin does.
What's your favorite style of music?
Adult contemporary.
No. Should be metal.
Tool tune.
You're a blade and I'm sharpening you. I see a little of myself in you.
Is he gonna become a school shooter?
Say you, Sassy. Why are you filming this?
This isn't a safe place, Casey.
I'm trying not to get angry right now. This is toxic masculinity in the movie.
You're confused about what's happening. You have to trust me.
Did you see Birth Movie's Death like it?
You can't be weak anymore.
I'm interested in buying a gun. I need something that can fit into my hand.
Thank you.
Sounds like you're after a handgun.
Thank you. Thank you.
I challenge you to a fight to the death in unarmed combat.
This is your belt. It is yours. It is sacred.
I want to see.
There'll be a $15 charge to replace a lost belt.
I want to see the dojo rules here. There are dojo rules written on the wall here. No shoes on the mat. No food or drinks on the mat. Bow when stepping on off the mat. Always bring your belt. Wash your gi. Respect your opponent. Tap or hear it snap. Tap or take a nap. Stay hydrated. If it works, use it. And then one that's not part of the poster but added on is guns are for the weak. Which is interesting considering he went to get a gun. So, I said while watching this that this is Toxic Masculinity the movie. And I truly believe that. I think this is the answer to Cobra Kai.
Exactly.
Whereas Cobra Kai is saying this is what we need for masculinity. This is saying why masculinity is bad and why this person who... He's basically a beta in the beginning. And he's trying to not be a beta anymore. And he's searching for his masculinity. Why going to these places and engaging in this alpha toxic masculinity, self-defense, notice how that's even what's worse about it is this is saying the art of self-defense is bad. So there's even a philosophical, psychological layer here that's terrible. So
right.
I don't
it
even...
ties with the Second Amendment and gun stuff. And like this is nonsense. My God.
Yeah, I don't even know if I need to say anything else about it. Maybe all of you guys can.
Maybe for the first time in Midside history, we can have a group tackle.
Right. What do you think?
I think so.
Well, unfortunately, that triggers the three tackle rule for myself and you, William. So which one would you pick?
I'll see Terminator. It's got things blowing up, so...
Guns.
Yeah,
I
like guns. I like the last one where
guns are bad.
Guns are bad. Okay,
I have the same instinct, but let me ask you: is there a value in seeing what the enemy thinks, or is it so obvious what the enemy thinks now we don't need to see the art of self-defense?
Maybe, but this to me is in the vein of Black Swan.
Yeah,
it's so bad, so purposely bad that you wouldn't want to support it.
in any way.
Like, it's Black Swan wrapped in comedy, right? Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah, which is unfortunate because I really like Jesse Eisenberg, and yeah, some Jesse of that Eisenberg. Stuff looked funny.
I always say Scott Pilgrim. Okay. Like, I mean, Jesse Eisenberg.
You would say Scott Pilgrim?
Yeah.
Well, that's even not even played by him.
I know, it's not. It's for some reason. Like, it's the same sort of archetype, right?
Yeah.
All right, so we're going to go into then... I'm gonna see Terminator then.
Fine.
It's sad that we're to the point that that's what is the best
thing. I think Terminator would be... I think, even though I tackled it, it looks like it would be... if it. It's the same problem I had with the Star Trek Discovery and a couple of the other shows. Why bother with the fluff, right? Why bother with the pretense of it being a Terminator movie? It could just be a good action movie, right?
It's called Guns and Robots.
Yeah, Guns and Robots. You got a good premise there,
well,
right?
Because that's what's marketable nowadays is people go for the franchises because they feel safe.
But that's my question. It's like, do they... like, is any franchise better than just Guns and Robots?
In reality, no. But again, we're thinking rationally and logically. We're not thinking pragmatically and emotionally.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. That's fine.
Okay.
Let's head into Life on the Midside.
Really? You want to? What time are we at?
I mean, it's been a pretty long episode. We can just end it.
You don't need to rant about parking.
Yeah. Okay.
I've heard you rant about parking so much.
It's a really popular topic, though. So if you want to hear me rant about parking, let me know, and I can do a free Patreon-exclusive episode. So hit us up.
If you're going to rant about parking, someone's going to pay.
Hit us up on Discord, on Instagram, on any of the social medias except Facebook, and let us know if you want to hear me rant about parking. I have serious questions that I want answered. Maybe it'll be next week on Life on the Midside. We'll see. It's up to you, Midsiders. But for now, what did we learn this trip? William?
Man, I learned that no good movie can go unremade.
That's right. I learned that CrossFit, while cultish, is a cult I might want to join.
Aren't we all on our way to joining cults if we're objectivists?
We're
objectivists and we're Snyder fans. We're in the cult of individualism.
That's right.
I learned that maybe I'm the target market for Star Wars Galaxy's Edge, which that makes me excited.
That would make you a normie, and that's not true.
Depressing. We're all normies in some...
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm a normie in regards to Star Wars. I think it's the one place I'm a normie, would you say?
Yeah.
I might be less of a normie because I don't really like the original trilogy, but... I think my reaction to the new trilogy is pretty normie.
Yeah.
Yeah, you like the first one, hate the second one, right?
Yeah.
That's
pretty normie.
That's what all the movies said.
Yeah.
All
right. Well, if you learned something this week, why don't you tell us on any of the social medias where you can find us at The Midside, although Facebook probably decreasing use, I've noticed.
I don't post on Facebook anymore.
Yeah, I get all these alerts from the page. It's like, people haven't heard from you in a while. You're 200 fans. Okay. So maybe not Facebook, but Instagram and Twitter and all those other places. You can let us know what you thought of the live show and our reviews and all the news and stuff. Go to themidside.com/podcast where you can listen to all the past episodes, including parts of the Snyder series and the Nolan notes, and going back to seasons, I don't know, hundreds of episodes at this point of content, which is ludicrous. You can also go to themidside.com/store and pick up your merch, which none of us are wearing because we're horrible at marketing.
I didn't want to wear a Snyder shirt because I don't want to just be like solely Snyder. So I didn't want to wear Welcome to the Midside, Hail Snyder.
You could have worn your false dichotomy, bro.
I haven't bought the shirt yet.
Oh, God. Horrible at marketing.
Somebody buy me a shirt.
And the classic logo tee.
Yeah.
So you can do that. You can subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Google Play or wherever podcasts are distributed and make sure that the episodes are delivered to you the moment that they are produced. Leave us 5 stars when you're there. That helps us move up the rankings. And patreon.com/midside, which we alluded to earlier. We're looking at podcasts on the couch. You allow a Lakers blanket in your home?
You gotta make some compromises.
Midside.com/Patreon or patreon.com/themidside where you can subscribe and give us a couple bucks every time we produce a piece of content. That really helps us keep lights on and do other fun, amazing things. Thanks to Liberty Dummy for syndicating us. But, per usual, the most important thing that you two can do, I did it this week, is tell a friend about the show. I met a new friend. I told him about the show. He sent me a text that he subscribed. on Apple Podcasts. So
we can get
doubling our audience.
We can get subscribers. They don't always listen, though. I got somebody at work to subscribe, and then he's like, I listened to the first 5 minutes of an episode.
The theme song?
He's like, this is what he said. He goes, I just realized that if I listened to the 90-minute episodes, I'd be spending more time with you every week than I do with most people.
Yeah. That's the point. I'm not confused by this. So tell a friend. That really helps the show grow. It helps us create new midsiders, and it helps us create new people like us. And the world needs more non-normies like us. Well, until next time, we love you lots.
This concludes your journey into the midside. I'm Justin M. Lesneski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a day.
Nothing like ending an episode with white people dancing. Brought to you by The Midside.